Amen. Good morning. Go ahead and grab a seat. Good to see you guys today. Glad you made it, and I hope you're ready to enjoy some amazing spring weather. It's finally here. I'm excited to be able to go outside and just, have fun. Students, I know that you're getting ready for things like finals. College students, those things are coming soon. Don't worry. Freedom is on its way. You're almost there. You have just a couple weeks left, and you're gonna have a great summer ahead of you. I'm excited for this season of our church. I feel like we've gone through a lot this year. There's a lot that God's been doing. There's a lot that many of us have been going through, and I love this time of year when we get to do a lot of celebrating. You know, we get to celebrate with grad night coming up, with a lot of the students graduating. We get to celebrate this year of ministry that we've had together in our life groups, and especially this month, we really get to celebrate Jesus Christ and who he is and what he's done for us, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun. One thing that I'm always reminded of whenever we're celebrating these things together is that what we have is something that the rest of the world around us does not have. And that's why in this season, we really want to be looking outward beyond ourselves as well and realizing there are people that actually need what we have. And not just the fact that we have a community like this to be part of, not just the fact that we have friends who support us as we go through things spiritually and just in life, but people who really need God, who need the presence of Jesus Christ in their lives, and that we want to invite people into that. So during this month of April, we're going to be doing a lot of celebrating and a lot of proclaiming the gospel, and I hope that's good for all of us here, but another thing we want to be able to do is to invite. So actually, I'm going to ask the greeters to pass out some invitations for all of you. We're going to give you, if each of you, as they pass these along the rows, if each of you can take two of these invitation cards, little rave invitation cards, we want to give each of you just two of these. We don't have a ton of them, but we want to give each of you two and ask you to prayerfully consider inviting a couple of people in your life that you realize, even as we're going into this new series called Missing, and we're going to be talking about that throughout this month, you know someone, or maybe a couple people, that are missing something in their lives. You see it and you love them. You love them because God, maybe they're your friends, your family members, people you see day to day, and you see that need and you want them to have more. You want them to have God at work in their lives. You want them to actually know Jesus personally. And that's something that's natural when we know Christ and when he's working in our lives. We want to share that and give that to others. And so if you take a couple of these, I want to ask you to prayerfully, and I would really say like even pray for the people that are in your life that don't know Jesus yet, or maybe have fallen away from the Lord, or for whatever reason you just see a spiritual need in their life, pray for them and pray and ask God to show you how you can invite them. And I would encourage you to really be bold in that. Don't wait till the last minute. We're trying to give you these a couple weeks before Easter specifically, because a lot of people are really open to coming out to a church gathering on Easter Sunday. They might not be open to that any other time of year, but for some reason they know this is a special occasion. They know this is kind of an important time for Christians. Maybe they're curious. And so if you invite them, I think there's a lot of openness. And what I would encourage you to do, actually, real quick, I want to practice this together. Because I think for some of us, we get nervous about that actual conversation, and then we're like, okay, is now the time? Like, oh, no. Is now, like, one of the brothers in our leadership yesterday was just sharing, I hope you don't mind if I share this, brother. He was just sharing that he had a friend, like, back a few years ago that he wanted to invite, and he was just waiting for the perfect time, and it never came, and so he just threw the card on their desk. And then the person never came back to their desk before Easter. And so I think for a lot of us, that's the way we tend to approach things. We get so fearful, we get so worried. But what I would encourage you to do is this, and maybe you can practice with someone next to you real quick. Just say, I would love it if you join me in my church for Easter Sunday. It would mean a lot to me if you came. Okay? So I would love it if you join me in my church for Easter Sunday. It would mean a lot to me if you came. Can you turn to someone next to you and just say that real quick? All right, you're all practiced up now. I'm sure that conversation's gonna go really well, but I would encourage you really like prayerfully think about this, because having Jesus in our lives is not an optional extra to make our lives better. right? A lot of times we think of it that way. And maybe it's actually because our hopes and dreams are not so different than the world around us, which we're going to actually be talking about today. Sometimes we think Jesus is like an optional extra. Oh, it'd be nice if this person knew God. It'd be nice if this person was, you know, a follower of Jesus. But, you know, they seem like their life's okay and not so big a deal. And we kind of look at that very casually. I think we actually need to recognize that this is not an optional extra thing to make someone's life better. This is an absolutely essential thing. Where unless we have Christ in our lives, unless the people we love have Christ in their lives, there's all kinds of brokenness, all kinds of just the effects of sin and what that does to us and our relationship with God and with others and even to our eternity, that if we don't have Christ in our lives, that's going to be a forever problem then for that person, the person we know and love. And so we want to really be prayerful about this, asking God to prepare people's hearts, praying for the Lord to give them openness and even curiosity about the gospel. And I would encourage you, just be ready to even share with them. Like, what's going to happen on Easter Sunday? Well, we're going to be celebrating who Jesus is and what he's done for us. We're going to have some special presentations. There's going to be a message about Jesus and what he's done. And we're going to be talking about some things that are missing from our lives that we need and that God can actually provide for us. So really think through that. Pray through that conversation. Ask God to prepare you for it. And I believe that God is going to use you for that. Turn to someone next to you that you just shared that with and say, God's going to use you. All right, awesome. Well, today we are getting into a new series, as we've already been sharing with you, this series called Missing. And the reason that we're starting this series right now is that as we were reflecting on our church and the things that we ourselves need and looking at the world around us and seeing the needs of the world around us, we just realized that there are, in fact, many things that are missing from our lives. And that's something that's a very strange sensation to recognize, even as a follower of Christ, isn't it? I mean, this is what Jesus says in John 10:10. He says, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Now, if this is what Jesus has actually said to us, he said, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly, then if we start to look at our lives, we say, wait, where is that? Where's that abundant life? Where's that fullness of life? In fact, when we start to look at ourselves, and then we even look at the world around us, and we start to think, am I missing something? Am I missing out on something that maybe God has intended for me, something that God created me for, something that I actually deeply long for and desire? And as we look at ourselves and realize that, we probably look outward and we realize there's something really missing out there too. There are all kinds of issues in our world, all kinds of things that people are focused on and pursuing after. And my fear, really what I suspect this morning, is that for many of us, while we hear these words of Jesus, we hear him say, I've come so that they may have life and have it abundantly. I think for many of us, we've actually tried to just take Jesus, who he is, what he's done, and just add that on top of the story that our culture and society tells us about what life is really about. You see, every culture and every generation has told its own story about what a full, good life should be. If you look throughout history, you'll realize every culture, every generation has told its own story. And what I've been realizing as I look not only at God's word to understand what he says, but also as I look out at our society and I see our culture and I see the things we're pursuing after, I realize there is a far different story being told here. And the two are completely different. Couldn't be any more different from one another. And we're going to talk about in a second about what Jesus actually tells us is the way to a full life, the way to the life that he designed us for. We're going to get there in just a second. But I have a feeling that for many of us, we're not going to fully understand that unless we first understand the story that our culture is telling us. Unless we understand what the world around us is giving us as this alternate story that actually doesn't lead to a fullness of life. It leads to a greater slavery and brokenness. We feel left and we feel lost and trapped and like we're missing more than we ever were before. You see, our culture around us, and I think many of you, if you start to reflect on this, our culture around us tells us that the path to a full life is in two things. It's in achievement and in performance. And I see this so strongly, not just out in the world, but I see it right here among us. And it's at every level of our lives. And the thing is, many people have made this observation that, you know, we in the Christian church, we talk about discipleship. We talk about a life of following Jesus. We talk about how Jesus calls us to follow him and we make disciples of one another and we do that together. But sometimes we don't realize that our culture and society around us are actually constantly discipling us as well. And the way our culture has actually discipled us is to say that the way that you get a good life, the life that you want, the life you desire, the life that everyone else is pursuing after as well, is if you strive to achieve all of your hopes and dreams, that you make that happen by carrying that on your own shoulders. You see, we strive to achieve whatever we think will give our lives value and will prove our worth. And so that comes out in a lot of different areas, doesn't it? We start to look at, if you start to examine how you invest your life, what you long for and strive after, what it is that you're trying to achieve, you might realize that you're actually pursuing things, and they're good things for the most part. These can even all be very good things. But we try to make these things what gives our life value and what proves our worth. So we approach our schoolwork, for many of us who are students. And we say, okay, I've got to do this well. I need my GPA to hit this point because that's the only way that I'm going to get the job that I want or getting into the grad school that I want. I need to hit this score on whatever test it is that you're taking, your SAT, your MCAT, your NCLEC, your GMAT, your like whatever, right? Everyone's got letters that they're trying to hit a certain score on. Because that in some way means achievement. It means that you've done something valuable. It means that you've proven yourself. And it's not just in school, in the workplace, it's your performance review. It's hitting that number in your 401k. It's getting that promotion. It's being that respected member of the team. It's getting to sit in that office, getting asked to play that role. We're always trying to pursue these things, even when it comes to our friendships and our close relationships. We want those friends that we do not have, and we long for that, we yearn for that, we try to actually achieve in our friendships. Even our romantic relationships, we take that as something that places value on our lives. If I have that girlfriend, that boyfriend, if I get married, if I have these things, well, then I will have made it. And that's what it means to have a full life in my culture and society. And by the way, it's not just in all these things, even in ministry. For a lot of us here in this room, we're involved in our church, we're involved in a lot of ministry. And sometimes even that, it turns into an achievement mindset. Say, look at, I have perfect attendance record in my life group leader must love me. Every week, I'm there. I never forget the refreshments, never, you know. Got it. Been on so many missions trips. Man, I serve faithfully in my ministry team. My leader can count on me. The pastors can count on me. I have this role of leadership. Man, I made it. That's what the good life is about, is I've achieved these things. And then the thing is, no matter what it is that we achieve, it's never enough. It's never enough. I don't know if all of you remember this. I think it was just last year, Harvard Business School came out with a study. They approached an investment bank and they said, will you give us access to your 2,000 wealthiest clients? And they surveyed those 2,000 wealthiest clients and asked them, how much money would you have in order to be completely content in life, to have everything that you need? How much money would you need to have? And regardless of how much money they were starting with, every one of them on average said that they would need at least 2 to 3 times what they currently had. So if they had $5 million, they'd say, well, I need at least $10 million to be truly content and happy. If they have $10 million, I need $20 million. If I have $20 million, I need $40 million. If I have $100 million, I need $200 million. No matter what amount it was, when asked, how much do you need to be truly content and happy, double, triple that amount was always the answer. I don't think that that's an isolated instance. For all of us, as we go through this life, our culture has taught us that we must achieve, and we must get this, and when we get this, then we need to get this, and when we get this, then we need to get this, and on and on and on, and it will never, ever get to a point that you actually feel full and satisfied and content and like you have the fullness of life. And the difficult thing about this is it goes even further, because as I said, it starts with this desire to achieve, but then we actually feel that we also need to perform. We need to put on a show in front of other people. We need to show others that we are somehow worthy. We strive to perform in a way that will secure acceptance and approval from others, saying that if they love us, if they approve of us, if they celebrate us, if they tell us, whoever they is, if they tell us that we've done a good job, if they give us value, then we will have a good life. And the hard thing about this in our world today, brothers and sisters, and I think this is a weight that all of us have to carry, is that performance never stops. We're always performing, always. We just walk through the halls at work or at school, or we go outside in our neighborhood, and that we're always on. We walk in with our husband or our wife into a church gathering, we say, oh, we need to keep up appearances, we're struggling at home, we're having a hard time, but we don't want others to know. We need to keep up appearances. We go to school and maybe you failed that last exam. Maybe you're stressed like crazy about the paper coming up, but I'm fine. Got a smile on my face. Everything's okay. Wanna see my selfie? See my latest vacation I went on? See the food that I ate? Wanna see the fun stuff I did with my friends before? And inside, we're dying. That performance never stops. And I mean, for myself, I feel this because, you know, as a pastor, I need to get up in front of a lot of people all the time. And so I'm like preparing myself and knowing that I'm gonna need to share something and try to encourage someone with something and try to present something. But when I leave the rest of my week, I'm not up on this stage. But for all of us, as we live in a world where we're just constantly in relationship with others and we're constantly on social media and all these things, which they're not like bad, but it has an effect on us. We're always performing. And we're depending on others' approval to actually feel like we have a life, a good life, a full life. I read this article recently, an interview with a woman named Abigail Disney. You've probably never heard of her, but you know by her last name who she's associated with. Right? Abigail Disney, just, you know, she's like in her 50s now, but she grew up with more money than she could ever need because of the family that she was born into. She is the granddaughter of the co-founder of the Walt Disney Corporation. So she's not Walt Disney's granddaughter, but she's, I believe, Roy Disney's granddaughter. And so she grew up kind of like living in Disney World and, you know, doing all the Disney family stuff. And she could never really escape from how her last name made other people see her. And she ended up going on, she got into Yale, she went on and got other graduate degrees. Now she does a lot of philanthropic work, stuff like that. She's also starting to make some films now too. But I found this one quote from her in this interview really interesting. She writes this: "I grew up with this doubt about myself. Like, did Yale really say yes because I was that good? Or did Yale say yes because of my last name? I'll never know. I've spent a lot of time earning things like postgraduate degrees that make me feel legitimate. And those feelings have started to go away, but that's outsourcing your sense of self. That is handing your self-esteem to the world to tell you whether or not you're allowed to have any, and that's a dangerous game." I think this is the game that we're all playing constantly, that the world around us is playing constantly. And we're told this story by our culture. And there's no one person telling this. This is not a class you take in elementary school or in college where someone tells you this is how it works. But our world as a whole, our society as a whole, tells us, and we see it, and it just gets into our blood that we must achieve and perform. And that's the way that we're gonna actually get to the life that we so desire. And brothers and sisters, I think you all know this and you feel this right now. That all of this leads to just a lot of anxiety. The American College Health Association came out with a study just a few years ago saying that more than 60% of college students experience frequent debilitating anxiety. That's a lot. I don't think that's just college students either, even though a lot of you are students. Our society right now is plagued with anxiety. And why not? If this need to achieve and to perform is a weight that's just constantly sitting on our shoulders, and if it plays into every area of our lives where we so need to achieve, we so need to succeed, we so need to get that validation from other people, then who wouldn't feel anxious about that? Who wouldn't feel anxious when the pressure's all on you, the spotlight's on you constantly? And beyond that, we look at our lives, and while we're trying to do all this stuff, then we feel like the world is also really out of control, don't we? We feel anxious, because ultimately we can't control other people's opinions of ourselves, no matter how hard we try. We feel anxious because we never know what kind of outcome we're going to get, even when we put on our best efforts. Maybe on that exam you study for like 40 hours for it, and then they ask the one question that's the final question worth 40 points, and that's the one thing you didn't study. We can't control those things. We can't control the chaotic circumstances of our world and all the things that happen around us. The teacher in Ecclesiastes, he observes this very well. He says, "Again, I saw that under the sun, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all." Wow. Who wouldn't feel anxious when the pressure's all on you, the spotlight's on you 24/7, and the world around you is so chaotic? We never know what to expect. We never know what's going to happen. We try our best. We give our all. We strive and we work and we achieve and we perform. At the end of it, we can't control how that's going to turn out to us. And we start to discover that this whole life that our world has been telling us is possible might actually just be a dream. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that anxiety? It's there. And I think it's there to tell us that there's something missing that maybe God is trying to wake us up to today. You know, this past week, my phone broke. It was a truly traumatic experience for me. My wife went out of town as well, like at the same time. So I'm sitting there, I have no means to communicate with the outside world. It was like I was dead and buried for 3 days. And I rose again. So I have no phone. My phone got a software update and it bricked the phone. And Google's support was not helping me. So after 3 days, I decided to go to the Apple store. I was on, amen. Can I get a witness on that? Amen. I went and got myself an iPhone and got it activated, and man, some of you, you're like more excited about that than Jesus rose from the grave. But man, so I went and I got an iPhone and I got it activated and I started getting all my stuff put in there. I started installing all my apps, and then it started. Bing, 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 bing. All the notifications built up over that past 3 days when my phone was not working. All the text messages, all the app notifications, all the different things all started coming through. And all those things were just like, I was like, oh my gosh, look at all this stuff that I was missing. And it just wouldn't stop. It just kept going for a few minutes, like going through all these things. Right? And I was like, oh my gosh, I've been going through this past 3 days and all this stuff has been going on. All these people have been sending me messages. All these things have been going on in these different apps and different stuff, and I've had no idea. And I feel like for many of us, that anxiety that you feel that's weighing on you, and maybe it's not real heavy all the time. Maybe it's just kind of there under the surface. Just that chronic anxiousness, worry, fear, uncertainty, doubt. Sometimes it's just down here. And sometimes it spikes. You become deeply anxious. Then it goes right back down to normal and you're just kind of in survival mode, getting by. And what I think, brothers and sisters, is that anxiety is a notification to you. A notification that you're missing something. A notification that there's something wrong. a notification that you've bought into the wrong story, the wrong path to the fullness of life, that is totally different than what God actually wants for you. God is trying to bring that to the surface, not because he wants you to just be overwhelmed by that anxiety, but because he wants to set you free. And that's the thing. Now, if it's there, if you see it, if you feel it, then we got to deal with it somehow. How are you going to do that? I think there were, yesterday in Ann Arbor on the Diag, there were a lot of people trying to deal with a lot of anxiety. Some of you, I'm actually really encouraged right now that none of you know what I'm talking about. So Hash Bash was yesterday. So if you're around town, it was crazy. I was like driving through all that. Those people were not relaxed. My gosh, the traffic was horrible. Everyone's like on edge. It's not fun driving through that traffic. That's all I did. Some of us were trying to deal with our anxiety and different things, and we actually wonder, wait, like pot is legal now. Like maybe if I just smoke some pot. Honestly, I know some of us probably thinking that. Like, man, it's legal now. Maybe that means it's okay. Like, give it a try when I feel anxious. For a lot of us, I think what we fall into is when that anxiety overwhelms, we just say, okay, I got to try harder. I got to do more. I got to perform better next time. I got to make this happen somehow. I have to meet the challenge. It's on me. But you have to hear question, brothers and sisters. Question what you are hearing. Question what you are buying into. The prophet Jeremiah warns us about this. He says in Jeremiah 23:16, thus says the Lord of hosts, do not listen to the words of the prophets who prophesy to you, filling you with vain hopes, empty hopes. They speak visions of their own minds, not from the mouth of the Lord. Now, I don't think there's like one prophet out there in our society, one Instagram influencer, one celebrity, one teacher, one person, one whoever out there that's like prophesying that this is the way to life. But it is the spirit of our age. It's the spirit of our culture. It's the spirit of our society. And you need to decide today whether you're going to listen to that or whether you're going to choose a different path. The path that Jesus Christ actually offers to us, and that seems so countercultural, so different, so paradoxical, that like in our minds and in our hearts that have been discipled by our culture and our society, at first it just really doesn't make sense. But we got to wrestle with this today. Because you see, as all this, and we've taken some time just to think about our world and think about how that affects us, and hopefully you're seeing some stuff in yourself. But in the face of all that, here's what Jesus comes and tells us. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Now to those of you in this room that you're just checking out the Christian faith, you're trying to understand what all of this is about. You're maybe asking some questions about Jesus and about God and about faith and about life. You're going to hear this. And it's going to strike you immediately how crazy this sounds. What a huge paradox this is. It's going to seem like it doesn't make sense, and you're going to genuinely start to wrestle with this truth that I'm going to share with you here this morning. And I'm so thankful. I think you're able to see this statement for what it really is. But please be patient. If you're checking out the Christian faith, please be patient with me and with the Christians around you here this morning. Because for the rest of us here who identify as followers of Jesus Christ and who have heard this verse over and over and over again, you see, we've stopped hearing it. We've stopped hearing this verse for what it really says. And we've just learned to get by taking these truths about Jesus that we believe and just putting it on top of all the dreams of our world that I think we're all here today realizing are not such good dreams at all. They're nightmares. They're bad dreams. They're false paths. But for many of us, we've just learned to take Jesus and his word and just kind of put it as a nice dressing on top of the way that the world pursues after things. And that's just an honest confession from me and on behalf of many of the Christians in this room and in our world. You see, I realize, and this is backed up by so much research, that for Christians, we live so much the way as the same as the way the world around us lives. I was just revisiting some research done in a, published in a book by Barna Research called Unchristian, and they studied differences between Christians and people who are not Christians. They said, what's the difference? And just so you know, when they define Christian, they said it has to be someone who identifies as a Christian and actually can clearly and accurately articulate the gospel message that we believe in. So not just a nominal Christian, but someone who actually understands what the message says and says that that's what they believe. And they looked to see what are the differences between these two groups. And what did they find? These are the things they found that were different about Christians. They swear less in public. They give slightly more to charity. They buy less lottery tickets. That's it. That's all. Found a lot of similarities. Just as likely to watch pornography, just as likely to do something to get back at someone who hurt them, just as likely to tell a lie to get out of a difficult situation. Wow. See, even if we know the right things, even if we hear these verses, I know some of you, you're hearing these verses, you're thinking, wait, but I know this. I've heard this thousands of times before. I've read those verses thousands of times before. And at some point in my past, a year ago, 10 years ago, I chose to follow Jesus Christ. So pastor, I'm all good. I'm not going for that same dream. I'm not following that false path anymore. I've got it put together. Then why are our lives so similar to people in the world around us that are actually living for a totally different dream? Why is it that if you say, okay, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ and I'm choosing a different path to the fullness of life, why is it that you can't let anyone beneath the surface to hear the thoughts that you're really thinking, to see what's going on in your heart really deep inside, to see the emotions that you're actually going through? Why can't you actually open up your life to anyone to show them that? Because we're just as insecure, just as anxious, just as in need of really the grace of God as the rest of the world around us. We as Christians need the gospel. We need the grace and mercy of God that we're going to talk about here just as much as everybody else. And in the face of the world's dreams around us that have pervaded our hearts as well, we have the same insecurities, the same fears, the same anxieties, the same idols, the same desires in our lives. We face all that same stuff and we pursue it many times in exactly the same way. We just put a little spiritual hat on it. We need to hear this same message. And it is a paradox that is so, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, think about it. I find paradoxes really interesting. Some of them are just funny, like this sign. Like, yeah, it's not, but it is. But then it's not, but it is. And it's just kind of confusing. Right? You're like, oh, okay. Doesn't mean much, but it's just kind of funny. Just kind of entertaining. And then other, like, you have some people that sound really wise that say stuff that sounds paradoxical. Like Socrates, he said this. He said, one thing I know, that I know nothing. Confusing. This paradox that Jesus presents to us is something that's so different than the world tells us. So different than the hopes and dreams of our society. You see, while our culture tells us and disciples us to believe that the path to a full life, a good life, is through achievement and performance, Jesus says that the path to a full life is actually to lose your life. And again, for many of us as Christians, we think we get this, but I'm really not sure that we do. I'm really not sure that we do. And for those of us who are not yet believers and who are asking questions and who are curious about this, you're wondering, wait, that, first of all, that really doesn't make sense, but could it be? Could it be that maybe this is actually the way? Because I've tried everything else. I've tried the achievement. I've tried the performance. And all I've gotten out of it is anxiety and fear and a crushing weight on my shoulders and feeling life is out of control. Maybe there's a different way. And maybe it doesn't make any sense on the surface, but maybe there's actually some hope here. That's what I'm praying for us. Because as we start to look at this, we need to unpack that Jesus is actually showing us a very different way, a way that goes the entire opposite direction, but in which we actually start to find real joy and confidence and freedom that we're never going to find in this world. There's hope here. Turn to someone next to you and say, there's hope here. There's hope here in two ways specifically that I want to share with you. And I wish we had more time to unpack this, but it's what we got. What we see as Jesus invites us to follow him, take up our cross, lose our lives with him for his sake, we find two things that I think are really important for us to reflect on here. And the first one is that a full life, a good life, is not found in achievement and in performance, but the full joy he wants to give us is actually to give your life for others. Not to try to accumulate, to achieve, to perform, to present yourselves in a good enough way, to earn, to validate, to get, to gain approval, to get all this stuff. It's not in all those things. It's actually found in giving our lives away for the sake of others. Jesus taught this and the early disciples lived this out. It's why in Acts 20, Paul says, in all things I have shown you that by working hard in this way, we must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. See, when we start to look at our lives, we look at people around us, we'll see that those who long the most to achieve and to accumulate and to earn and to prove themselves, all these kinds of things, those who long for those things the most are the people who have the least joy. Because again, all the weights on their shoulders, always fearful of things going out of control, there's no joy there. There's only slavery there. Jesus says it's better to give than to receive. And we start to realize that. In fact, we see glimpses of it. We see glimpses of it even in our surrounding culture. Like, I mean, I love when I just see little pictures of this just all over the place. Some of you, anyone sees like the recent trend, trash tag? Anyone see that? There's been this trend recently of people going out and cleaning up like really messy areas full of trash and then posting like before and after pictures. And it's been a trend actually kind of around the world. Here's a picture of a guy cleaning up on the side of the road. Right, so I kind of like this guy. I want to be his friend. But he, you know, there's an area, trashy area on the side of the road, and he just brought some bags and cleaned it all up and, you know, trash tag. So he did that. Here's another area, a family that actually cleaned up a beach that they vacation at. It's covered in trash. This family got together and cleaned it all up, taking care of it themselves. This one I was amazed by. There's this guy in Mumbai who organized 500 volunteers over the course of almost 2 years to clean up 11 million pounds of trash. Isn't that amazing? Can you even imagine? I can't even conceptualize 11 million pounds of trash. I think we start to see these glimpses. One of the times you feel the most fulfilled. One of the times you have the greatest joy. Yeah, you get that score on the exam. You get that promotion at work. You get that financial windfall. You get these things. You get applause from people. And maybe you experience this little jolt of something that lasts just for a moment before you start to move on to what's next. In my life, the times I've felt the deepest satisfaction and joy have been the times when I've been giving myself away for others. Even the world around us in these small ways starts to see that. And it's even in the people we actually celebrate and admire, isn't it? Some of you probably heard about the sad death of this rapper, Nipsey Hussle, this past week. All right, you can show that. Some of you might not be aware of who he is. I'd actually only like heard of him before, but I wasn't really familiar with him. But when I heard about his death and started looking into it more, I felt it was just really tragic. Because Nipsey, he was from South LA. And as he like grew as a rapper, he started to get some success. He started to make some money. He actually just got his first Grammy nomination this past week. As he started to make it in the music industry, rather than just spending it all on himself, he decided to give away to the community instead. So he fixed up playgrounds and basketball courts in his community. He provided jobs for people who were out on the streets. He paid for funerals for families that couldn't afford to bury their own children. He opened up a STEM center in his neighborhood so kids from the city could learn science, technology, engineering, and math. He was giving himself away for his community for the people he loved. And we, when we see that, we admire it. Like, wow, there's something special about that. There's something that, there's part of us, we want that. But then we say, wait, I can't let go. And here's the thing, brothers and sisters. Jesus gives us the freedom to be able to let go of the false hopes and dreams, the dead-end path, that dry well of achievement and performance, and start to take the life that God has given us and pour it out for the sake of others. And there is a real joy and a real life there, and something that truly satisfies and gives us a sense of purpose and meaning that the rest of our world does not have. And God wants that for us. God wants us to have that joy of giving our lives away to serve and love and invest ourselves in others. And yet this can't be everything, can it? This can't be the end of the story. Because for so many of us, maybe you immediately draw the conclusions to this and realize that even this could turn into just another achievement and just another performance. In fact, so many of us, that's what we fall into. Again, even when it comes to ministry in the church, we serve, we serve, we serve. We get into different positions of leadership. We get involved in missions. We do these different things in ministry. And maybe it's not even in the church, but it's things out in the world around us. We volunteer, we get involved, we try to give ourselves away. But that spirit of our society, that spirit of our culture starts to seep in. And even these things start to be about achieving and proving ourselves and performing for others. And we get trapped in the same cycle once again. So that can't be the end of the story. That by itself, while it's good, while that joy we receive when we give our lives away for others is real, that actually can't be the end of the story. The end of the story, the real message here, is not just that we receive joy when we give our lives for others, but that we find full freedom when we actually give our lives to Jesus. We say, I'm not going to hold on to control anymore. I'm not going to hold on to this desire to achieve and to do all these things and hear these words that he is saying. Again, Christians, brothers and sisters, hear this with me with fresh eyes. And those of you who are asking questions about the Christian faith, really process this with the rest of us, because it's not easy. It's not easy when we are so baked in with this achievement and performance mentality, when that anxiety is so overwhelming. But Jesus here, he says these really countercultural paradox things. He says that the way to life, the way to have life, is actually to take up your cross. That somehow, the way to life is actually the way to a horrible death. If you want to find life, take an instrument of torture on your back and walk around with it and ultimately subject yourself to a horrible, gruesome, torturous death. That's the way to life. Oh my gosh. What does that mean? But it's not just there. He says, take up your cross. And then he says things like, lose your life. Lose your life for me, for my sake. Lose your life with me. And we realize Jesus is actually saying the way to life is not by holding on to control of ourselves, but rather by surrendering control to Jesus Christ. Surrendering control to God, saying, God, I can't ever control all of this anyway. I can't ever get a handle on all of this anyway. God, you're actually in control. You're the one who can actually give me life, real life in this world and real life for all of eternity. You're the one that can make this happen. So God, I am surrendering to you. This is the invitation that Jesus gives us to actually trust him with everything that we were trying to do to make a full life for ourselves. And here, this is where we get to be really set free. Because we've been going through life trying to achieve, trying to perform, trying to do all these things, trying to make a name for ourselves, get the approval of others, and we've been running ourselves ragged, driving ourselves into the ground, carrying that weight on our own shoulders. And then when we see Jesus' calling, take up your cross, lose your life. The real gift that we see here is not that Jesus is actually gonna tell us to go and be hung on a cross. It's not that he's gonna actually tell us that we're gonna lose our lives at this very moment, but rather the invitation is that he actually did these things for us. He went before us in all the in all of the chaos of this world, in all of the uncertainty, in all of the out of control nature of this world, he actually achieved and performed for us the life that we never could. He was perfectly generous and just demonstrate this incredible servanthood toward those around him like we never could. We're so selfish. We go to ourselves, we serve ourselves, we please ourselves, we live for ourselves. Jesus came not to be served, but to serve. And he laid his life down and did for us what we could never do for ourselves. And we could never die for ourselves either, even if we were to hang ourselves on a cross, even if we were to try to pay that penalty for ourselves, we would never be good enough. We would never be worthy enough to actually die and pay for our own sins. We could never do it. And so when Jesus is saying, take up your cross and follow me, he's saying first and foremost, trust me. Trust me that I did for you what you can never do for yourself. So now, brothers and sisters, the pressure's off. The weight is lifted from your shoulders and mine. The fear and the anxiety of the chaos of this world is removed from us. Because where before we felt like we had to prove ourselves, we had to make something of ourselves, we had to show that we could do it. Now Jesus says, pressure's off. I did it for you. Where before we felt like we have to please someone, we have to earn someone's affection, we have to show that we're good enough, that we can handle it, that others can approve of us and accept us and tell us that we're worthy. Now Jesus says, I have already been worthy for you, and I give you freely all the love and grace and acceptance and righteousness and fullness of life that my Father's kingdom has to offer. I give it to you as a gift, but you need to trust me. You need to take up your cross. Say, my life is not my own anymore. You need to be willing to let go of control, to lose your life for me and with me as I go to the cross, as I go to that grave. Jesus lived this perfect life on our behalf so that now we can let go. And this is the gift, the true treasure that people like the Apostle Paul found. It's why in Philippians chapter 3, verse 7 to 8, he said, but whatever gain I had, I counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. Paul was someone who had achieved and performed better than I or anyone in this room ever will. He'd done everything he possibly could in this life to work his way up the ladder, to gain the approval and acceptance of his people, of his culture and society. He'd done all the things that anyone could possibly expect of him. And yet at the end of it, he found that that was not real life. That was not a full life. That even after all that, he didn't have joy. He didn't have freedom. He didn't have confidence. He had what you and I have, anxiety, fear. The constant threat that we won't do well next time. And he found this great gift, that if he could take all those things and consider it loss for the sake of Christ, that maybe there he would find life. And today, brothers and sisters, especially in what I know has been a tiring and stressful season for many of us. All that weight's been on you. The stress of those tests coming up, it's all been on you. The stress of your performance review coming up, it's all been on you. The stress of your financial situation, it's all been on you. The fear of what other people think of you, the fear of whether you compare well with others, the fear of whether you appear good to others on social media, the fear of whether your parents or your boss or your friends or whoever approve of you, that's all been on you. Today, I want to invite you to consider all those things loss, to lay those things down at the foot of the cross and say, Jesus, I choose to trust in you. And so one thing to sum all this up today is rest in Jesus, rise in joy. Rest in Jesus, rise in joy. Today we have the choice offered to us to rest in the finished work of Christ on the cross, to rest in his life perfectly lived for you and I, to rest in what he has achieved on our behalf, to rest in the grace and the gift that's been given to us. And as we die with him, as we choose a life where we take up our cross to follow him and lose our lives for his sake and for the sake of others, that we then can not only die with him, but also rise in the joy of a life not lived any longer for ourselves, but lived for his sake, lived to bless those around us, lived to serve those around us, lived to just enjoy and experience the freedom and life of someone who no longer has to be enslaved by these things that consume us. As we close out here today, and we're going to be taking communion here in a moment, rather than having some life applications for you to do, instead I actually want to invite you to reflect. Because again, for so many of us, this message, we've heard it so many times, it's hard to hear it and see it with fresh eyes and open ears. I want to invite you to reflect here this morning. I want to invite you to reflect on three things. First, what do you have to prove? What do you have to prove? What is it that you are so longing to achieve that you think would make your life valuable? Is it to get that perfect score, that perfect job, that perfect whatever? Is it to get married? Is it to have kids? Is it to have your kids achieve certain things? Is it to work your way up? Is it to get that position in ministry? Is it to have a spiritual resume? What is it that you're trying to prove? And can you surrender that to God? Second thing, who do you want to impress? Who's the performance for? Who do you long to receive affirmation and acceptance from? Is it your parents? Is it your friends? Is it some nameless army of internet trolls that will never approve of you no matter what? Is it the boss? Is it the professor? Do you even know who it is? Who are you performing for? And can you surrender that to Jesus? And what do you have to lose? What are you holding on to? What makes you anxious that if you lose it, you'll lose everything? What makes you feel out of control, like, oh, I can't let go. I can't let go of this thing. And can you let go and surrender that to Jesus Christ? Because you know that that's where you actually find the fullness of life. I want to ask us to take some time to reflect on these things. Because as I shared, we're going to be taking communion here in a second. And more than us doing more for God, more than us trying to achieve or trying to kind of make our own way there, we really want to be able to reflect in this time and let the Lord speak and let the Lord begin to set us free. For some of you, maybe again, you're here because you've been asking questions. You realize that the story our world tells is a dead end. It's not going anywhere. And you realize you need something different, something new. For some of you, you've been a follower of Christ for a long time, but maybe you're realizing you've just taken these truths of the gospel and just slapped it on top of this world's dreams to try to spiritualize it, make it look pretty. But beneath the surface, you're trying to prove yourself just as much. You're trying to please others just as much. You feel like you have so much to lose that you can't let go. In all these ways, we're alienating ourselves from God. We're going a different path that takes us further away from him rather than closer to him. Ultimately, this is the problem of sin. It's the problem that Jesus died on that cross for. That we could never live a good enough life, so he lived that perfect life for us. We could never pay our own penalty and deal with our debt to God and the way we've sinned against this world, people around us. We could never deal with that ourselves, so Jesus did that for us. The work is finished. The weight's been lifted from your shoulders and mine. We can now rest in him. Rest in what he has done for you and I. And we can now rise in the joy that he's given us to, instead of holding on, instead of trying to keep control, to actually give ourselves away and find their real joy, real satisfaction, real life. I'm gonna ask you to stay sitting. And we're gonna get ready to take communion here in a moment. As we do, actually, maybe we'll do it a little different, Johan, than we've got a little time. What I want to ask you to do is if you just sit where you are, bow your heads, and we're going to actually just listen to a song. A couple of brother and sister in our church prepared a song to share with us, and we're just going to listen. And as we listen to this song and as we reflect on those questions, what am I trying to prove? Who am I trying to impress? What do I have to lose? Can you let the Lord just minister to you in this moment, set you free, give you life, release you from that bondage? And can you begin to say, Jesus, more than anything, I just want to be with you. I want to take up my cross and follow you, as crazy as that sounds. To find my life, I actually want to lose it for you, because that's where I'm going to really find life. God, I want you, Jesus, I want you more than anything. You are the fullness of life. In you, I can rest. In you, I can find joy. In you, I can find freedom. So will you just bow your head? Will you reflect on these questions? And as you do, let's listen to this song and just let the Lord minister to us before we take communion together.